Hello, Internet. Welcome to episode 78 of the Assorted Calibers podcast, the Second Amendment podcast that has a little bit for everyone. I'm Weird Beard, and tonight I am bringing you another ACP round table. So, of course, we have the wonderful hostess with the mostest, Erin Paulette.
Did you just call me fat?
I'd like to speak to my lawyer.
Good call.
Am I being detained?
Yes.
We can do this later, because right now you're just introducing. You don't need to hear how my day's gone so far.
We'll be talking about your day.
Okay.
And we'll probably also be talking about David's day. Hello, David.
Hello.
And of course, we've got Henry Wadsworth Oddfellow.
This might shock everyone, but I bought a knife.
The hell you say?
Ye gads!
I bought something, too. It Ooh. Was not a knife.
Was it a revolver?
No.
Oh.
Not interested.
Yes, you will be.
I will be.
In 1911?
No.
A 1911 revolver?
No.
A cruise missile?
Close, but no. Right shape.
A model rocket?
Nope.
A pocket rocket?
Deep pockets would be necessary.
I meant a marital aid.
Oh. It is a firearm accessory.
Is it a can?
Yes.
Tell me more.
Well,
tubes.
Yes, it's my first suppressor. I finally got around to getting the trust paperwork done, and then mailed the originals to the lawyer. So I emailed him like, "Okay, I signed everything, got it notarized, I sent it off to you." He's like, "You're supposed to keep that. As soon as it gets here, I'll turn it around and send it back to you." I'm like, "Oh, thank you." And anyway, so when I was at NRA annual meeting, I wandered over to, amongst other things, the Black Aces Tactical Group, and those guys are just really cool. They're just a lot of fun. And we're chatting, and they have a suppressor, well, a family of suppressors, I guess you could say, called the Po'Boy, which they sell for $199.
Oh.
For those who are not aware, the tax stamp on a suppressor to the federal government is $200. So I just recently, well, actually, I've been kind of building it and taking it apart and rebuilding it in different configurations, my 300 Blackout AR. I'm like, what's the point of having a 300 Blackout if you're not going to put a suppressor on it? I figure, you know, my income is somewhat limited. Much as I would like a $700-$800 suppressor, that's not in the cards right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd pick the right six numbers, maybe. So, get one of these. It's $199 plus the $200 tax stamp. I don't have to get any type of fancy muzzle device because it screws right onto the barrel.
So, I assume you just unscrew the flash hider and that's what it mounts to?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
Except since I built this from the ground up, it doesn't have anything on the muzzle to begin with. It's just regular threaded.
Right, but...
But normal, yeah, if you had an existing complete AR, yeah, you just turn off the...
Cool.
Whatever muzzle device you have.
Cool. I was going to ask how, you know, despite its low cost, you know, how much does it quiet down? But you've got a 300 Blackout. If you're running subsonics through it, that's a pretty quiet round to begin with.
Yep. And on their website, they actually have their testing protocols and their tests in what they did. So the decibel testing was done to mil 1474D specs on the 30 caliber version. And they tested it in an AR-10 in 308, a Remington 700 in 308. Those both registered 147 decibels. An AK-47 in 7.62x39, which dropped it down to 138 decibels. A Romanian PSL in 7.62x54, which dropped to 139 decibels.
Mm.
And a Savage in 338 Lapua that dropped down to 149 decibels.
Wow.
Yeah. So I figure putting this on a 300 Blackout running subsonics, it's going to be...
Also clear a 338.
Yes. At least once. Although it's easier after the first shot.
The suppressor does not have wipes.
No.
The wipes are made of metal.
Yeah, details. But But yeah, they've done some other stuff. Is it's a direct thread method, so no quick connect or anything like that. And it's customer serviceable using a standard AR-15 stock wrench.
Nice.
Yeah. So those are all positives to me. Yeah, it's a little bigger and a little heavier than some of the whatever magic dust they're made of suppressors that cost five times as much.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, it's 8.5 inches long.
They'll put the water bottle cap filled with Magic Quiet juice.
Yep. There's no reason I couldn't run it wet.
Yep. How does that work? Does that just work as cooling, or does
it does two things? One, it does reduce the temperature because the thermal load has to be sent somewhere, and water is a great medium for absorbing thermal load. Nobody's going to do it. That's what she said, huh?
I'm tired. Oh,
well. I'm sorry. But also, because the water is incompressible and air isn't, it affects the expansion.
Oh, nice.
Because one of the things that is causing the sound is the oxidation, the combustion of the air in the suppressor. So that's why the first shot is louder and then the rest of them are quieter. As long as you don't take too long between shots.
Well, it's also the same. If you ever watch, there's that great video of the guy pinning the shotgun shell to the breech face of a shotgun that had the barrel removed and pulling the trigger and did it under a high speed camera, and you watch the shell rupture. And essentially the shell ruptures and 99% of the powder just sprays all over the range. Because it doesn't have that compression behind it. And so then, in theory, a shorter shotgun is going to have more unburned powder coming out of the barrel than a longer barreled shotgun. And then, furthermore, the same idea, if you add a suppressor, you've just got this magic little can that also slows down the air velocity and it's filling with fire. You're going to have a lot of afterburning. But only for the first round, because the second one, it's used up all the oxygen.
Right. Again, unless you wait too long between shots.
Yeah.
As someone who works on a range and has helped clean the range at the end of the night, I would say a good majority of the cartridges fired spew a certain amount of
It's going to be one of those nights.
Whee!
Well, we'll see if David can come back, but that was him just rapidly ejecting from the show. Not our doing.
At first, I thought it was me.
But all right, well, so that's we'll have that as a good break of the. I want to save Aaron for last. So, Oddball, how's your week been?
My week's been pretty good. This weekend, I went to a local hacker convention called Freaknik. No, not the party down in Atlanta. And while I was there, I was the backup speaker in case of anybody canceled, and they did. So I talked about 3D printed guns.
David's back. David, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me again?
Yep. Awesome. Yep. Awesome. Oddball's talking about hacking.
Okay. That was strange. I have no idea what that, maybe it's just moving amongst us.
Yeah,
I guess. Yeah.
I suspect Discord is being a weirdo.
So I'm not sure, is it going to be you or Aaron next who gets the hit?
I hope not.
Talking about 3D printed guns, I had to brush up a little bit and make sure I was caught up to the most current things. Mm-hmm. And yes, Facebook is still blocking people from linking to various websites. And I found out that Australia actually has... put serious legal teeth behind banning anybody from having possession of the code for a 3D printed gun. So, which means I have a printed book that can get me up to 14 years in prison in Australia.
Yep. It's not my fault.
There she is.
You cursed me.
It's still not my fault. I don't have the power of cursing.
Now that we're done with that,
Frig,
you made it happen.
I didn't make it happen. I can't make things happen.
It's the secret.
I barely do stuff.
So Oddball, talking about I was getting off on a rant.
And we lost Weird. Holy shit. Well, it's got he was, every one he, of us.
He did say he was getting off.
Okay, I'm back now.
Okay, so that's gotten every one of us in order. Hopefully now we can put it to bed.
Yes. Yes. Discord, are you done now? Can we continue?
Yeah. So I was saying that I've mentioned it before on New Zealand and the evil scumbag that shot up that mosque or the mm-hmm. two mosques. I looked it up because I kept saying, look, it's a Commonwealth nation and stuff like, I mean, I, there was a, I think I used it for my gun death files on my blog was a guy that murdered somebody and then was locked up and then was released and then went and murdered somebody. And it's just one of those, like, what, how does that happen? You know, in UK, it does happen. And so I assumed that because New Zealand is still part of the British Empire, so to speak. It's the same way.
Yes.
The longest anyone has ever served for a prison sentence is 30 years.
Is that counting from when it was no longer a penal colony? I'm guessing.
I assume it was a fairly recent inmate. Okay. But they served 30 years before they were paroled. So yes, the line about the in New Zealand they're going to lock up for a couple of years the guy who did the crime and they're going to execute all the guns. Good job, guys. Mm-hmm. And also the idea of Oddball, yes, someone getting 15 years for having a book. And yeah. Then someone getting 30 years for murdering dozens of people.
Well, murder is not actually as bad. Knowledge is power. Murder is just inconvenient.
And conveniently, a lot of people in the audience when I was giving that talk were unaware of Facebook and Amazon censoring that stuff and not letting you publish.
Facebook didn't surprise me. It's par for the course. Amazon disappointed me.
Yeah, especially not only did they pull the book from their website after Forbes did an article and reached out to them and said, so about you printing this book? And Amazon's response was, we're doing what now?
We just let people use our service. Oh, I guess we shouldn't let everyone use our service.
Right. But also they pulled websites down off of their AWS services.
Yeah.
But also a lot of the folks there also remember the whole controversy with PGP encryption back in the 90s, where the government tried to claim that encryption was a weapon. And therefore, under ITAR.
Yes, but remember what Adobe did?
I don't remember what Adobe did. I remember the T-shirts with the code printed on it, and the one guy with the code tattooed to his arm.
Nice. But around that time, the federal government was demanding that encryption algorithms that they be provided a back door.
Right.
To get into them. And Adobe said, no, not only that, but we're going to up our encryption game and we are going to make the most unbreakable encryption that we possibly can and provide it to our customers.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, even though their software prices are insane, I've always had a kind of a soft spot for Adobe after that.
Yeah, I can see that. And the other thing was, one of the guys at the convention was talking to some folks about gun stuff and about how nobody's actually going for your guns and blah blah blah. And I knew this guy. I knew that there was no point in trying to have a reasonable conversation with him about anything, really.
Oh,
He's really one of those people best just completely ignored about everything.
If he told you that the sun rose this morning, you'd have to run to the window and check.
Yes, I would. And then he got into self-defense in general. He ended up telling the person that he was talking to, saying, "Oh, well, you know, martial arts and self-defense training is completely stupid because all you need to do is kick him in the balls, and that'll stop anybody." And beyond that, or you can go with pepper spray. Pepper spray will automatically drop anybody. Doesn't matter.
Please tell me you went even further and said a taser is an absolute just power word stop.
Or wasp spray.
Oh no. When he got to the pepper spray, Panya, the two people we were talking to, and myself, all of us, in unison, just yelled out, "You are full of
sugar."
Good for him.
I think I know some guys who could use pepper spray as breath freshener.
Well, and it's I've been told that they do it in basic training of hit you with pepper spray and make you do stuff while the pepper spray making your eyes burn.
I put whole videos up on various audio fisks and blog posts where literally showing police training. This is even military. Some of it's military, but police training. I had a video of one group where the whole class, they got sprayed with pepper spray. They had to fight a dummy, then fight an actual person. The person wasn't putting up that much of a fight, but they did have to engage with hand to hand with an actual person. And then they had to shoot a target with their gun. So yeah, no, it works out just fine. Like the whole line is, you can fight through it. Yes, it is awful. No, but most of the reaction you get from it is the sheer shock that something that awful is happening.
Yep. Would you like to hear a stupid David story?
Sure.
Everyone seems to like the stupid David stories. Back when I was in high school and you could still buy the little canisters of, they listed it as the stuff that came before CS, but tear gas, basically. Little tear gas canisters for people to use if they were attacked, they could spray them. But this was like mid-80s, so it wasn't the fancy pepper spray that we have now. So my friends and I went to the store and we got some. And then we decided that we needed to make sure that this worked. And we forgot one small detail.
Wind direction.
That's the one. And the funniest part, so we each, you know, we had a mark on the fence because the stuff said, you know, supposed to have like a 7 to 10 foot range or something like that, I think it said. So we stood back and we all aimed at the fence and we all sprayed and the wind blew it right back into our faces. And my three friends are practically falling on the ground. Actually, one of them did fall down, but they're practically on the ground clawing at their faces and I'm sneezing.
I'm also going to say, as someone who has tested out pepper spray and has been aware of the wind set, even if you know which way the wind is going, you're still going to get a whiff of it.
Oh, yeah. You're going to
catch some. Yeah. Well, I think have I told the story of my first time at NRAcon?
Nope.
No.
There was one company that was showing off their pepper spray gun. It looked kind of like a slim taser gun.
Well, was that the Kimber? Was that?
No, this was before Kimber came out with theirs, but it looks an awful lot like it. Yeah.
Okay.
And they had a display where they had a fairly slim wall display with stuff on both sides of the wall. And I was on one side and overheard two women discussing the pepper spray gun, and one of them told the other to be careful about, you know, where she was pointing it and finger on trigger and that sort of thing. And the other one said, "Oh, don't worry, it's on display. It's inert and empty."
Oh, dear.
And pulled the trigger to demonstrate that it was empty.
And it wasn't.
It wasn't completely empty.
Wait. Aaron, could you do the voiceover version of that?
It was not, in fact, empty.
Thank you. and since these women were, my guess, you know, in their 20s, 20-something girl squeals, and on the other side of the wall, I was picking up traces of the pepper spray, and it was making my eyes water a little bit.
All right, so let's go. We've futzed around long enough. Aaron, how's your week been?
Well, my week has been fairly standard. My weekend was, I'm looking for the right word. It wasn't quite zany. It was somewhat productive. It was. Here we go. Weird. My weekend was fabulously defiant.
Nice.
Why would you say that, Aaron?
Go on.
All right. So last podcast, which has dropped today, I mentioned that I was going to be up in Washington, D.C. and speaking at the Declaration of Restoration. And it was actually at the mall, on the mall. At the mall is different. for people,
let's go to the mall.
Exactly. For people who know what I'm talking about here, it was really close to the Smithsonian Castle. I can't say the Smithsonian because there are multiple buildings on the mall that are the Smithsonian, and the mall is like 2 miles long and like a third or so mile wide. Just saying it's on the mall is hideously vague. It's not quite, like, as bad as saying it's in Central Park, but it's close.
Yeah, no, I would say it's pretty comparable.
Okay. So I was there, and I didn't know what kind of reception I would be getting, like most of these rallies that I go to. And I have to admit that I was a little bit concerned, because some of the speakers were further right than I am comfortable with. There were some Confederate flags on display, and I'm not worried for my safety, but it's just a matter of how are they going to receive me? Is this going to be a tough crowd? And, well, this is probably going to sound like bragging, but with my usual aplomb, I won them over very quickly. Now, I need to give a little bit of context here. And people who are subscribed to my wall, you should have already seen this by now. But there are some people who...
And she uses this term loosely.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to dehumanize the man, but...
Yeah, he's not a socialist.
He's not a very nice person. And he's one of the people who hides behind scripture and uses it to beat people. And he found out that I was coming to the rally, and I don't know if that was what made him sever ties to it, or if he was severed anyway, and then he was just talking some crap. But
I got the impression it was the latter from the way he mentioned it, but yes.
Could be. But he said just some really awful things about me. And there's no point in visiting it. I've got the video on the wall if you want to watch it. And I very deliberately did not link to the video because I didn't... Okay, if you want to jump to my defense, I love you. Thank you very much. But that'll just make me seem pathetic. And it would actually hurt the goal that I'm going for here. So this particular person, in a bout of pettiness, he actually offered a cash bounty for people who would disrupt the event. And you know, he was saying glitter bombs and fart spray and clown music because he considered this a clown show, and glitter because I'm there, and I don't know, fart spray because he's a jerk. And I felt called out by this, but I knew that just would not help anything. It would just give him more ammunition. And so in my best evil game master method, I sat down and I thought, how can I use this? How can I use this to help me and hurt him in the classiest manner possible? And then I had an idea. And I implemented that idea with my very, very dear friend, Connie, who has been on the show. Her life is crazy busy. I just want you to know that she misses doing the segment. It's not that she doesn't want to do it. Let's just say that she has family issues that she's dealing with. And leave it at that. And so they are sucking up all of her time. But
she's got a lot on her plate.
She does. God bless her. But I actually asked her for this last minute thing, and she delivered. And so what I did was, after I was introduced and I said hello, I paused actually my speech and I explained what was going on, basically what I told you. And I said, so you'll need to stand by just for a moment while I do a little bit of fundraising. And I open up the bag that Connie brought me. Now, unfortunately, it wasn't glitter, but it was big, shiny, sparkly, multicolored sequins.
I think it actually worked better than if it had been actual glitter.
Yes,
because it wouldn't have been
since one landed in your hair and it looked amazing.
Well, it was also much easier to clean up than the craft herpes. But yeah, it sparkled and so, you know, I poured some into my hand and I threw it up in the air and there was cheering and there was more in the bag, and so it's just I just sort of emptied it a little bit like a child, although I tried to do some fabulous arm sweeps, but it was just ha glitter. And then I announced, well, there's your glitter bomb, Mr. Hill. Please make your $100 check to Operation Blazing Sword.
Yes, I thought that was particularly awesome.
And
like, so, okay, fine. You're going to be a jerky bigot, and bring it.
Yeah, and I was told by the organizers that that was, and I didn't take offense to this. I was flattered, but I was told it was a ballsy move and it was a mic drop moment. It's like, okay, yeah, that was fun.
Oh no, it was brilliant. And also now on top of that, not only did you call him on the table and do just that, but two, I already know the answer. The prick didn't donate any money, has he?
Well, he hasn't, but to be fair, I haven't made sure that he knows, because I just got back this afternoon. I've been home, I don't know, well, at this point, like 6 hours, but I'm exhausted. And so I've actually found a YouTube of me doing that, and I'm going to link to it, and I'm going to give him the address where he can donate. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm going to be completely straightforward. You asked for glitter bombs. There's a glitter bomb. Please make out your check to Operation Blazing Sword. Here's how you can mail it, or you can do PayPal. And I'm going to wait for a little bit. And he's probably not going to do it. In which case, I can make hay out of it. I fully expect that he won't.
Yeah.
But it will be nice because he acts like he's a man of honor. And it's like, okay, you truly have a smidgen of honor. You will honor your promise. So
you made
so,
this request. I fulfilled your request. I would like my payment, please.
Yeah.
Challenge accepted.
Yes. Yeah. So I was really pleased with that. And then I gave my speech, and my speech was, it was not the speech I wanted to give because my electronics shut down. It was so cold. Now, I know that electronics do shut down in the extreme cold, but I was thinking like freezing or below, and it wasn't below freezing. Now, it was like in the mid-40s, and by the time I got on to speak, the sun had gone behind clouds, and the wind was blowing.
That's what I was going to ask about the wind.
Yeah. So there was some wind chill, and it's, I've got my tablet with me and they're introducing me, and then I go to turn it on, and I've been periodically checking it to make sure, you know, I've still got signal, the things, you know, I don't want it to shut down so that I have to log in again.
Right.
And so I press it and it's like, it's not turning on. Okay. I'll hold it down, and it was dead, and I'm going, mm-hmm. Oh, crap. Okay.
Screw it. We'll do it live.
No.
I love that.
No, I mean, that happened, But what I was going to do was, I have my cell phone with me. That's okay. I've got signal. I will pull it up on my cell phone. I've got a 47% charge. This shouldn't be a problem. It just shut down.
Yeah.
Huh.
It shut down in my hand. And the bad part is, you know, I had gotten to Google Docs. It just wasn't on that one. And, you know, it brought up one that I'd accessed previously, and I'm mashing on it to go to the directory in Google Docs. And it just tells me, you know, 0% charge shutting down. And I knew that it had half a charge. And so it's just, no.
Yeah.
That's when I go,
I'm
okay.
Sorry, Aaron. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's when I just went, okay, we're improvising this. And that's when I went up and started my speech with what is becoming a catchphrase for me. In the immortal words of Bill O'Reilly, F it, we'll do it live.
Yep.
And,
yeah, that was...
You did it, Aaron. I gotta say,
you rolled with it beautifully.
Oh, thank you. One of the things that bothers me listening to it is that I say and more than I'm aware of doing, especially when I listen to the person, the young lady who went in front of me and the gentleman who went behind me. They didn't seem to do it at all. Maybe they did and I just missed it, but they seemed to know their stuff and it was really irritating.
Well, also, I mean, to be fair, the uhs and you knows and all of those things.
I don't think I do a you know, but okay.
I do. I was calling me on the table
oh,
right
okay.
there. But that's done when you are thinking. You're accessing your brain and it's just a verbal placeholder mm-hmm. on the standby. I'm trying to word. And
yes.
And so you're doing the, all right, I have a speech all written out. I am in speech mode. And it's very much, I mean, people will notice on the show, like when I suddenly switch over to the end cards of the show, thank you all to all our Patreon members. I my voice takes a slightly different change because I'm going from something where I'm speaking extemporaneously to where I'm reading something written on a page to make
sure.
Yeah,
the cadence changes mm-hmm. noticeably.
Exactly. And so you switching over, you going in, planning to do a prepared speech and now being the, all right, no, we're actually shooting from the hip.
Yep.
That will cause a lot of, you'll be revving your brain in ways that you weren't prepared to. You didn't stretch before you did that.
Basically, yeah.
That's true.
As someone who has talked for a living for 20 plus years, and I've actually taken speech classes, Weird's exactly right. You have a script, you're prepared for the script, you've reviewed the script, and suddenly there is no script, and you didn't have that particular script in that particular structure committed to memory. Your brain's pulling up what it can, and you're definitely going to do the, what was I, and
mm-hmm.
as you're processing. Because you can only process so many things at once. But like I said, you handled it elegantly.
Thank you. And the irony thank you. The irony of the situation is that pretty much the moment I got off, quote unquote, stage, my phone worked. Because I'd put it like in my parka pocket right next to my body. And so it mm-hmm. had warmed up enough that it turned on. And I'm like, son of a boop. The tablet took longer. But by the time I got to the restaurant around 4 or 5 o'clock, it was fine.
You could show people that speech you were supposed to make.
Yeah.
If I may have one more line about Mr. Hader. As someone who does audio fisks and likes to debate, I like to scrap, I will say one big thing that I've got to point out about his little rant is that he talked about he had something about the FBI. I don't even know what the heck that was all about.
he's special.
Was that just straight up crazy talk, or were there FBI people there?
Not that I saw. Now, I do know that there were, I don't know if they were Capitol Police, if they were National Park Police. There were some people there because, as I said, the mall is huge, and I I didn't really know where we were having it. And so I saw the two cars that are parked nose to nose so that the drivers can talk. And I walk up and it's like, hello, can you give me directions? And I explain what I'm looking for. And they say, yeah, it's over there about 100 yards. So there were cops actually there. They were watching the event. I don't think they were FBI.
Because I bet you that's standard protocol. Because
it's a rally on federal grounds. Of course, there's going to be police there.
Yeah. And like Jane Fonda is like going on a thing where she's going to get like arrested every day doing I don't care. But
I still think that they should figure out some way to apply the three strikes you're out rule to her. It's like, oh, okay, Jane, that was your third one. You're going away for life now.
Oh,
But as to his bit about the FBI informants, I don't know. I think that was, I hesitate to make an armchair psychological diagnosis, but sounds a bit like conspirator thinking and paranoia to me.
Yep.
Maybe he needs that $100 for tinfoil.
Yeah, but the big thing that he was talking about that I firmly felt on and I felt was more relatable to the average person, and may I say the average Republican voter, was he was upset that there was stuff being offered in Spanish for people that did not speak English or spoke Spanish better, and the fact that there was a trans woman, and made an extra point that a trans woman who prefers the ladies.
That really wasn't the repulsive part. The repulsive part was where he suggested I would expose my genitalia to the crowd. And
seriously,
he seriously said that. And I'm sitting there going,
like, he's got some serious issues.
And I'm sitting there going, I don't know if it's worse if he actually believes this or not. Because if he actually believes this, I don't know how I can contemplate someone who could reasonably believe that I would expose myself at a rally. On the other hand,
just anywhere in public,
right?
I mean, the logic behind that is if he felt that was at all a reasonable thing, then here he should clearly drop trow just to confirm that he is in fact a cis male.
But the other hand is that if he knew it was hyperbole and was doing it just to inflame his readers, listeners, watchers, and get clicks, that's repulsive in a different manner. And
I mean, it's puerile. But and that was my big statement, is he states that he is taking an issue with one Aaron Paulette speaking at the group because Aaron Paulette is queer and on multiple levels. And then also that they are catering to immigrant people.
And the thing is, all right, the press release about it was released in Spanish, but to hear him talk, it makes it sound like there's going to be an interpreter right there translating everything into Spanish. That's what it sounds like he's saying, right?
But either way,
it didn't happen.
Doesn't even matter. Is the fact that he says, all right, I have a grievance on this, on these issues, and lists them off, including the FBI thing that, again, let's not even go into there because,
That way lies madness.
Yeah. And so he says, I have my problem here, and then continues to rant and essentially is flinging insults at immigrants, at Aaron, and just nothing but ad hominem attack. And it's one of those things of the, as someone who is constantly getting into the scrum with the antis, that's not the way you go. You go, I have a grievance with this. I don't like red flag laws. And here is why I don't like red flag laws, essentially, and also why you shouldn't like red flag laws, because you make this statement on this, this, and this, and this does not provide this, then this, and it harms this, this, and this. He made no such statement.
He
stated that he did not like Aaron, and
for reasons.
It was quite crass to her so that Aaron would not like him as well. And again, also, since this was a whole, like, you know, human rights group. So there are people talking about all of the Bill of Rights.
Constitutional rights, not human rights. Yeah. I want to make that clear.
and I mean, human, constitutional rights are human rights. But there are some human rights that are not just as implicative to somebody who lives in Zimbabwe as it is to someone here in, you know, me in Massachusetts or Aaron in Florida.
I feel there's a semantic argument to be made, but I'm tired and I don't feel like doing it.
There's no need to get onto it. But essentially, I thought, oh, maybe he's one of these guys that he's a First Amendment guy or he's a Fourth Amendment guy, and that's his wheelhouse, and he's just cursory to the other ones and all that. And then he starts talking Second Amendment stuff, and I just went, oh, so wait, you're a Second Amendment supporter, but yet you're anti-immigrant. Don't they have a right to defend themselves? And like I said,
no, only my kind of people have the rights enumerated in the Bill of Rights, not those other kinds of people.
It wasn't just that. He saw that I was speaking and assumed that I was a leftist and therefore I was anti-gun. And that was his objection, because he said something about how basically the leftists and the anti-gunners were now running the show, and that was his main objection. And I'm just going, you didn't even bother to look at my page. You didn't do the cursory examination. If you did, you would know how insanely pro-gun I am. For crying out loud, the picture on my homepage is me posing on the hood of a car with a big, it's a fake, but it's a chain gun.
And also, let me just state, one of the reasons why we do the Assorted Calibers podcast is I want this to be the big tent podcast, because there's a million and one Republican and a million and one Libertarian Second Amendment podcasts, and I want this to be the podcast that specifically is welcoming to those people that do not fit into those standard boxes, because those other guys have got all their other podcasts. Let's
have this one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. let's steer away from that partisan crap and welcome them in. And I'll point out, hey, guess what? Yeah, we got Sarah Kane and Lara Smith. They are not right of center libertarian people. They vote fairly left and all that. And they are friends of our Second Amendment rights. So hey, guess what? I mean, it's one of those, yes, I get it. And I can understand how people see it. Is yes, there's a whole million and one people on the Democrat stage vowing for president. Every single last one of them is not just anti-gun, but insanely anti-gun. There isn't even one that is the, oh, no, I just want reasonable restrictions. No, there's
although, did you hear Bernie Sanders' statement?
Yes, I was just about to make that point. Bernie Sanders actually surprised the hell out of me. He calls, and I dropped the link. Bernie Sanders calls mandatory buybacks unconstitutional, says it's essentially confiscation.
Well, good on Bernie. Like I said, he is the one candidate that I do not trust him when he kind of makes mouth noises that are anti-gun.
Mouth noises.
Well, I have appreciated that he has said in the past that, yes, he's anti-gun, but he was sent to Washington by the fine folks of Vermont who are not. And, well, he was sent to represent them. Therefore.
Yep.
That was actually one of the things I respected about Mario Cuomo was, I remember him at an event one time, he was on a radio show, and he made a statement along the lines of that because of his Roman Catholic upbringing, he had very strong feelings about abortion, but he was representing the people of the state of New York who felt differently, and therefore, if he was going to stand as their representative, he had to represent them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Didn't apply that beyond that to firearms, but that's a different story.
Yeah, and I was talking to multiple people this weekend who are in other traditional senses very much on the left side of the political spectrum, but are very much pro Second Amendment and stated very, very quickly, it's the, yes, I like guns, but the NRA will never get a penny from me because of, you know, their stances on XYZ that have nothing to do with gun rights.
Mm-hmm. They've gone too many times they've gone off message. And that's not what it's about. I mean, that was when, what's her name?
Dana Loesch.
Dana, yes. It's like, do you have any idea how much damage you just did with that one thoughtless statement?
Well, and her rant about the Teletubbies, or
it was Thomas the Tank Engine,
Thomas the Train Engine,
and
Thomas the Tank Engine,
and something involving the KKK. It was one of those. No, I'm not going to click on it. I value my sanity too highly. I don't want to know how she got there.
Right.
Well, so I got to say this leads into a good segue. So, Aaron, was there anything else you wanted to say about your wonderful, exciting adventure in DC?
Well, yes. Well, first I have to say that I got some very expected pushback from certain members of my constituency who saw the Trump banners.
Because you showed up there?
Well, that too. But you know, they saw the Trump banners, they saw the Confederate flags, and they wondered what I was doing there. And I had to remind them that just as I am an ambassador for gun ownership to queer people, to humanize the face of gun ownership to the anti-gunners, I am also an ambassador to people who are potentially, because I don't want to make accusations, but who are potentially anti-queer, and I need to humanize the face of queer rights to them. And that's exactly why I was there, because if we stay in our own little echo chamber, nothing's going to get done. To briefly make a religious thing, Jesus went to where the sinners were. He didn't hang around just with his disciples. You've got to go where the people need to hear the message. And that's what I did. And
you got grief for it, as usual.
Well, I got a little bit of grief, but I explained what I was doing, and I think I explained myself really well. And one of the things that I mentioned was that there were actually queer people in the audience. One of the queer people was waving the Confederate flag. And so I had people come up to me and thanking me for doing what I did, for representing them. I had some people come up to me and say, you know, I didn't understand gay people, trans people. You've opened my eyes. I had like an hours long conversation with someone at dinner regarding, and we're not going to get into this, just we're not, but about the 7-year-old in Texas who, according to parents, may or may not be transgender. That's just an entirely separate can of worms. But I had a really good talk, and I listened to what they had to say. And when I agreed with them, I told them that I agreed with them. And, okay, now I understand your concerns, and here's why I disagree, and so on and so forth. And it was a very productive conversation. And I was also thanked by parents who were saying, you are standing up for my kid, and that means a lot to me. Thank you. And so just looking at them, you think that they're all hardcore, hard right, conservatives, rednecks, but just like every other time, they welcomed me warmly. They listened to what I had to say, and people came up to me afterwards. And of course, it wasn't everyone, but enough of a number that I felt it was significant that I knew I was making a difference. And they told me they appreciated it, and I made a difference to them, to their family members. And so that was wonderful. And honestly, that's the reason I went. It wasn't to speak before a rally. It wasn't to spread my message everywhere, although, God, it would have been wonderful if we'd had a huge turnout. We unfortunately had only about 50. Mm. You know, if we'd had 500, oh my gosh, that would have been great. But just getting my picture on TV or whatever is not why I do this. It's making a difference. It's education. It's outreach. And I accomplished that. And so that made it all worthwhile.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's absolutely what you need to do. Like I, one of my girlfriend in college was a legitimate homophobe. people get pedantic about that term on the, does it apply to people that hate gays? No, they're not scared of gays. They just despise them. Whatever. She was legitimately afraid of them. Her honest to God thought was, you know, queer people were sexual perverts and were going to do all sorts of awful stuff. And to be fair, like, her only experience with gay people was seeing coverage of like the pride parades on the news. And so she just assumed that if you're gay, it's orgies all the time and leather daddies. And so I'm just like, interesting. Didn't challenge her, didn't say anything, but hey, there's a band party going on. You're my girlfriend. You should come with me. I'm going. Come on. And started introducing her to my friends. And my friends became her friends. And she realized that some of my friends like sex different than she liked sex. And realized there's actually nothing particularly scary about that. And that was the end of that. Same thing with my wife. She was my girlfriend. She did not like guns. And she was afraid of guns. And so I bought a gun, and she was very mad at that. And I said, well, too bad. There's a gun in the house. And also, there's a gun in the house. I am going to require you to safely know how to shoot this gun. You don't have to like it. You don't have to, you know, love it and all that. But you can't have access to a firearm and not know how to use it. That's dangerous and bad. And I'm not going to just have it there and have you not have access to it. So we have to go to the range. Okay, that makes sense. And to be fair, my wife's not a gun lover. She's not super duper into it, but she gets it. And she is a Second Amendment supporter and a very strong one at that. And so, yeah, we can win these wars.
Yeah. And echoing your statements, that's very much Panya has gone through very much the same situation where, before she met me, most of her experience with people owning and definitely people who carried guns were the stereotypes that give gun owners a bad name, as she's correcting me of, except her dad, who, you know, but he had a 22 rifle that he almost never shot. Oh, and I'm being corrected. He also had a 22 Ruger Mark pistol. But I, as far as anything of what anybody would consider a serious cartridge, and like I said, anybody who carried, were the the rednecks or in the worst fashion or the blowhards or whatever until she met me Wizard and Adam from the old gun blog variety show and a few of our friends that said, oh no, there are people who are not jerks and just want to carry because it's a really good defensive tool and like collecting guns because they're interesting mechanically or history items or whatever.
Yep. And that's just the whole thing. So information will set you free and you can't shy away from that. And so again, Aaron, you did a good thing.
Aw, thank yes. you.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep. And actually, weird and oddball, your story is not that dissimilar to mine, except I already owned a variety of firearms when my wife and I first started dating and she had never even touched a firearm, but she's also a fairly logically structured person. She's more about information. And so once I explained it to her, she was still not comfortable with it. And then we went out shooting because she was like, if I'm going to be around these things, I need to know how to use them. I need to know how to safety unload them if need be.
And, yeah, absolutely.
And now she'll remind me that we haven't gone shooting recently.
And my mother was the type that literally I saw her as we were cleaning out my grandparents' house and got to my grandfather's old shotguns, her coming near it, literally hands flailing in front of her face and freaking out. But they were going to be stored at her place for a little while until the ones that were going to other family members went over there. So I made sure that she knew how to check to see if they were unloaded and all that fun stuff, even though I was pretty sure there hadn't been a round of ammo within 50 feet of any of those guns in decades.
Hmm. Yeah, and then there are the people who come into the store. My husband passed away. We were cleaning out my granddad's place. We found this gun. We don't know if it's loaded.
Yeah.
Yeah, my favorite one recently was the woman that came in with a Beretta Jetfire in 25 ACP, a pre-1968 model.
Ooh.
Does that mean anything particularly to you?
Pre-68, that means that's before the Saturday Night Special stuff.
It's also before Beretta added the thumb safety.
Ah, okay.
Yes, the safety was the long, heavy trigger pull. Now, this is a tip-up barrel pistol. So you put the magazine in, you flip the lever, the barrel pops up, you put a round in, you close the barrel. The hammer has a half-cock notch, but it's not the kind of thing you rely on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she brings it in to have me take a look at it and all that, and there's a magazine's loaded, there's a round in the chamber. The hammer is back.
Ooh.
Yeah. Because Mark from CN Arsenal says, rule number one, get it out of the hands of the customer.
Yeah, and then there's all the stories of the folks that come into a shop and say, oh, don't worry, it's unloaded, I checked, and no, it was not unloaded.
Not, in fact, unloaded.
Thank you.
And this is why we absolutely need to have firearm safety taught on all levels of public school.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Again, yes, I understand. You don't like guns. You're not into guns. You might even be pro gun control. You also live in America, and it doesn't matter if it's California, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Maryland, any of the super duper duper anti-gun places in there. I am speaking to you from Massachusetts, and I am in my armory. So guess what? Just because you don't have guns and all that doesn't mean that your kids aren't going to come over to my house to play. And yes, all my guns are locked up, and even if I didn't live in Massachusetts, they would all be locked up. Because, yeah, I have kids running around in my house, and so let us be safe. Not everybody is quite as reasonable as I am. Your kids can still encounter guns. So therefore, as Masada Yub says, don't gun-proof your house, gun-proof your kids.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or kid-proof your guns, gun-proof your kids.
Let me have this, and then you can say whatever you're going to say. As I like to point out, we don't believe in abstinence-only sex education. Why then do we insist upon abstinence-only gun education?
Exactly.
Yep. Yep.
And it's also why, when there have been multiple times that I've had a gun out and I was, doing one thing or another to it, and Panya looked over and asked, she did not know, so she asked for me to show her that it was unloaded, and it's just I didn't, and I won't say a word. I just automatically open it up and show her that it's unloaded while I'm handling it in the house.
Yeah, because the same ideas. Yeah, you don't have guns and all that, but yeah, maybe your dad or your uncle or all that has guns,
or and, your kid's friend's dad.
Yeah, yeah, and they die and you're cleaning and you're helping clean out that place. And when you move his bed, you find that, yeah, he has a gun that's his bump of the night gun is right there and it's ready to go.
And taking those extra couple seconds, well, that's going to lose you a heck of a lot less than, if you put a hole in a TV or, definitely if you put a hole in somebody by accident because you just thought it was unloaded and you could have sworn you had just checked it.
Yeah. Well, that's also why we make such a big deal of the rule three on the, it's very, very hard to keep, you actually have to make a deliberate effort to keep your finger off of the trigger because the gun is designed so that your finger goes onto the trigger. That's number one. Yeah. That's also why we always teach to index your finger, because you're right. never going to miss that trigger.
That's why it's a training issue.
You're gonna find that damn trigger, no friggin' problem. And that's because of that. So therefore, you have to be very deliberate to keep your finger off the trigger. Imagine if somebody had a 1911 tucked under their mattress, and as the person peeled it off, it flicked the safety off, and then their finger is going to naturally just go to the trigger. It's such an easy way to put a hole in somebody. And so why wouldn't we just teach people on the, that's something you need to be aware of. And then as soon as you find it, you need to clear that gun. And they should be able to teach people to clear most guns quite easily.
Yeah.
Of course, that those jet fires, they don't have extractors. Actually, I had a very similar thing. My a friend of mine's dad got checked into the hospital, and she went, look, he's going to be in the hospital for a little while. I want to just round up all the guns that are in his apartment and just tuck them away someplace safe while that's going on. And I don't know crap about that. So, weird. You're the gun guy. Come help me. And also, this guy was a close friend of mine. So I went, we need to keep looking. There's one that's his favorite, and I haven't found it yet. I know it's in here, and I know it's someplace close. But one of the guns I found was a Beretta. Was a Beretta 21A in 25 ACP.
Nice.
And it was the first time I'd ever handled one, and so I picked it up. And it did the natural thing of I dropped the magazine, and per him, he liked to put a couple rounds in the magazine. I don't know why he never filled them all the way up, but there was a couple of rounds in the magazine. And okay. And so I racked the slide and saw a loaded round in the chamber, but it was just there. Close the slide, rack the slide again. There's no extractor. It's taken there. So then I went, oh. Let's push this button. And then the barrel tipped up and it flung Boink. A 25 across the room.
Yay. Yes. Yep. That's a fun surprise.
But it flung a 25 across the room in a good way. It flung the whole thing.
Right.
Not just the fast part.
You didn't know it was a catapult.
Yeah.
Yep. But that actually kind of reminds me how I got a couple of guns in my collection. Was a woman that I worked with about 20 years earlier. Her father-in-law had passed away, and they'd gotten all of his guns out of the house and gave them to relatives or sold them or whatever. And then about 20 years later, as you might expect, her mother-in-law passed away, and they're cleaning out the house, and they found out that, oh, they did not in fact get rid of all of Dad's guns. Ooh. So she came to me, hey, you're the office gun nut. Do you want them? no idea what they were. Yes. Yes, I do. I'll make sure they get a good home. So there were a couple of bolt-action 22s, Birmingham Small Arms lightweight 30-06, and the rubber butt pad was no longer rubber. It was ceramic at that point. Yeah. But there were also two handguns. Now, here was the tricky bit. This was in New York. Ooh. In New York State, under the law, a permit holder dies, you have 15 days to legally and properly dispose of the handguns. This was 20 years. So they're freaking out like, nope, what county was his permit in? Contact the sheriff's department. Tell them what happened. Tell them that you've got a licensee to transfer them to. They'll either ask you to bring the guns in, or they'll send an officer to collect them. And that's exactly what happened. But they were freaking out. I mean, this is how bad the wife was. My coworker was, there was some ammunition, and she couldn't bring herself to pick up the box of ammunition and put it in her car.
Wow.
Yep. But one of the revolvers was a Ruger single six in 22 long rifle with the serial number matched 22 Magnum cylinder.
Ooh. Nice.
Yeah. But the other one, the true prize of all of this, was a Smith & Wesson Model 27-2 with a 5-inch barrel.
Ooh.
They made fewer of those than the other lengths, and it's the perfect size. Yeah.
Phrasing.
That's what she said.
All right.
But it worked out well.
Let's not bury the lead. Let's let us have the games begin. We were just talking about Bernie Sanders and talking about that. We were talking about the Democrat contenders for president. A new challenger has entered the ring or is making moves to enter the ring, and we got to talk about it. Michael Bloomberg.
We hate this white New York City billionaire businessman in the White House. Let's get a white billionaire, former Democrat. Let's get a white former Democrat billionaire businessman in the White House.
Yeah.
Did I miss anything?
Racist. Missed the racist part.
Oh, right.
That applies to both, yeah.
Yes. So Michael Bloomberg enters. So he has decided to bring in the youth of Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden, the charisma of Elizabeth Warren, and the love of the Second Amendment of Beto O'Rourke.
And
what's the worst that could happen?
And the overall charisma of Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, Hillary Clinton. I went with old Betty Warren, but that'll work too. Oh God! I mean, so the big thing that came to mind was that every presidential campaign season that has come up, Michael Bloomberg has let the world know that his group is launching an exploratory. He has an exploratory committee, and they are looking into his potentials as a presidential nominee. And he's looked as both a Democrat and as a Republican. He was a lifelong Democrat until he decided to game the New York system and run as a Republican so that he wouldn't have to primary against the Democrat. And so every year since he decided not to be mayor of New York anymore, he has launched an exploratory committee. And reading between the lines, the exploratory committee has said, no, they hate you. And so he has quietly never ran for president.
But this time is different.
This time is only different to the fact that actually when the whole before these like 25 challengers had entered the ring, he had also said that he was contemplating a run. And there was nothing, and then he did not enter in, which clearly meant that the polls came back of they hate you. And then he also watched Bill de Blasio run and fail at running for president.
Bill de Blasio was running for president?
Sure was.
Wow, I missed that.
Yes, you did. If you blinked, you might have missed.
Okay.
You might have been in the bathroom at the time. His presidential campaign lasted about the long as a number two action in the bathroom, and not the kind where your feet fall asleep.
The one where you forget a book.
Yeah, no, literally the kind of, well, that went well. Bloomberg has entered in, and so, oh my God, he is 77 years old. So if elected, he will be the oldest person to ever hold the office. So far he is reached with Donald Trump is literally saying, bring it on. This is the best choice ever. Thank you so much, Michael Bloomberg. And Donald Trump has endorsed Michael Bloomberg.
Seriously?
Yes. Yes,
he has. Really?
Yeah, Donald Trump, he refers to him as Little Michael because Michael Bloomberg is, I believe, 5'5", and somewhat conscious of that.
He does definitely have little man syndrome.
And so Donald Trump has endorsed Michael Bloomberg and says it's a swimmingly good idea. Bernie Sanders, at that same rally that he said that gun buybacks were mandatory buybacks were confiscation and therefore illegal. Also, I haven't looked up the video for it, but supposedly Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who has also spoken out against Michael Bloomberg, asked Bernie Sanders a question about him, and Bernie was unable to answer because he was laughing too hard.
What was he laughing about? The question itself?
I don't know. It's the headline is top stories. This is from Slate. Sanders couldn't stop laughing at report of Bezos asking Bloomberg about presidential run. And when Bernie Sanders heard about the report that Amazon owner Jeff Bezos asked fellow billionaire Michael Bloomberg whether he considered entering the 2020 presidential race, he could barely contain his laughter. Sanders laughed so hard that he couldn't answer Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who was in Iowa campaigning for Sanders, and took over and began asking the reporter's question.
Nice.
So, yeah. Needless to say, the Elizabeth Warren has spoken out against him. I mean, he's the more socialist leaning side of the Democrat Party is definitely concerned about a billionaire plutocrat running for the office. And there has been a few people that have welcomed him, which is one of which was Kamala Harris said, "Yeah, there's more than enough room for one more." Of which case, I would point out that she has laid off her New Hampshire campaign office and staff,
and so, that's one of the key early states.
Yes, yeah. I was actually talking to Larry Smith about this, and I mentioned the fact that I was making beef stew in my crock pot, and I was wondering if my beef stew would be done first or Kamala Harris's campaign.
Yes, I look forward to never hearing of her again.
Yeah, she's sticking in just as a vanity project at this point in time.
But she did, I believe she was the one who said that she would not run as an independent as well. I know Tulsi Gabbard said the same thing, mm-hmm. which whenever I hear someone say that, I'm like, independent run in 5, 4, 3.
Yeah. 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 Needs to say our political system has gone on and the politicians lie. And then when they break their campaign promises, we go, yeah, of course they did. I mean, we've got Elizabeth, the current Democrat frontrunner is Elizabeth Warren, the woman who ran for a Senate reelection under the campaign of, no, I will not run for president. She promised mm-hmm. she would not run for president because she wanted to let us know that if we elected her, she was going to serve the office, of which she is currently not serving. She is serving herself.
Well, that's because she's a politician. They're all self-serving.
Yeah, exactly. And again, no one was surprised.
Mm-hmm. Well, to paraphrase Tony Stark, she's serving at her own pleasure. And if there's one thing we can
count on, it's her own pleasure.
It is pleasuring herself.
So what do we think Bloomberg's chances are? Because we can all agree that if he wins, it'll be a disaster. But what's the over-under here?
I think his chances are better than Beto O'Rourke's.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's neck and neck with Kamala Harris. Like yeah. I said, the idea, again, not only has he, for the last like 3 presidential cycles, attempted to throw his hat in the ring and was discouraged so strongly by
his own committee.
Yeah. Again, like,
please don't do this.
I bought the Beto O'Rourke t-shirt. I needed to have it. And I specifically wanted to buy it directly from him. I did not want a bootleg. I wanted to pay him money for doing the great justice that he did for the Second Amendment cause by going, no, we've been calling you paranoid forever. I am going to do a big thing of not only did I say, yes, we're going to come and take your guns, but I said it on a national stage surrounded by leading Democrats in a massive amphitheater filled with other people, and there was not the least amount of pushback. So no, when they
there
said
was cheering,
yeah, mm-hmm. they said when we are all coming for your guns, no, that was all agreed upon. Like if you think that no one's yep. coming for their guns, you didn't get the memo. And so I paid good money for that, which meant that also I was magically applied to the Beto O'Rourke newsletter.
And, which was just hysterical on its own.
And like 2 weeks before he dropped out of the office, I was sent information on some very optimistic polling on how well Beto was going to do against Donald Trump and how good his campaign was doing. And then he dropped out. So again, and you'll often hear that like just before an election, internal polls show that we're ahead by 15 points over our opponent. and you're going to lose by 20. The internal polls is pretty much the optimistic starry-eyed yes men. And his optimistic starry-eyed yes men said,
no, don't do it.
You're polling slightly below bowel cancer.
See, Weird, one of the reasons I love you is that in this instance, you and I are the only ones who have a positive view on this. People are freaking out and, oh my God, what if he wins? And you have that opinion, which you just posted, and mine was, this is an absolute win for us for the following reasons. Okay, so Bloomberg has been losing a lot of money trying to buy elections. I am all for him pumping more of his war chest into this election and losing it too.
Oh, yeah. I would love to see, honestly, I would love to see him bankrupt himself on lost causes.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. But
no, that is completely impossible. I mean, that is literally emptying the ocean with a bucket.
But I would love, as Aaron said, I would love to see him.
Right.
Redirect funds.
So let's see. If he's trying to win this election, his attention's going to be divided, which means that his attempts to buy other elections will not be as effective. I'm not going to say that they'll be completely ineffective, but he's splitting his attention. Let's see. Because he's a national candidate, all of this stuff is going to come to the fore, not just him buying elections. But remember, he was a petty autocrat before with the soda bans and the salt ban and the who knows what else.
And he was also pro Terry stop frisk.
Oh, okay. And
remember that?
I know stop and frisk. It's been a long time since I've heard the word Terry stop. I didn't realize they were the same thing.
Yeah, but and also when he found out that no, police were using it just to target minorities almost exclusively, he continued with it and fought the Supreme Court that was trying to rule it as a Fourth Amendment violation.
Right.
Yeah.
And I believe, because you mentioned this one time when we were talking, how he's absolutely known to be sexist. I mean, they've got proof. About how women would come in and he'd tell them to dress pretty or something like that.
Yeah, no, he would absolutely berate women for not dressing pretty enough for the office, or wearing clothes that weren't as flattering for them, and would suggest that, and would firmly suggest that they wear more flattering outfits.
There was recorded.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, there's a lot out there. Of that. I mean, he has mm-hmm. been a gentleman as far as keeping his hands and his other appendages to himself. Let's not go half cocked, if you will. He has not shied away or denied any of these things, where he has just been very, very open about how women should dress and women should look
and act.
Yeah. And then finally, when he loses, because I know he's going to lose, we can have an argument as to when he's going to lose. I personally think he's going to lose against Warren, but even if he somehow manages to buy the nomination by buying the superdelegates, by buying the DNC, he's still got to compete against Trump, and I think Trump really has this election in the bag. So regardless of how he loses, it's going to do terrible, terrible things to that fragile, overinflated ego of his, is delicious.
Yeah, there's another thing about that is that, so this is a pure speculation of mine, and there's a little bit of facts to back it up, but it's mostly pure speculation. It's mostly me gaming it. Is I suspect, and it's pure speculation, that Bloomberg paid off the massive debts that we know the Brady campaign had over the last decade for essentially him being secretly control of the board. And mm-hmm. the number one reason why I believe this is because Bloomberg, ever since he abandoned or essentially renamed Mayors Against Illegal Guns, of which he was one of the founding mayors.
Mm-hmm. One of the few who didn't wind up in prison.
Yes. That's the one of the whole big reasons is, oh yeah, a whole bunch of them are currently behind bars. So every town for gun safety is Mayors Against Illegal Guns. He just renamed the corporation. It is the mm-hmm. exact same corporation. He did not file for a new corporation. When he renamed that, he has been he started branching out and created subdivisions. This is where he started having the bridge. So suddenly there was Moms Demand Action, which I would argue was formed out of whole cloth, and it was not formed by Shannon Watts because her whole bit about her being a stay-at-home mom is a complete and utter lie.
Yeah.
And it appeared that she just suddenly abandoned a very well-paying job that she was working out of a home office. She was at home and she was a mom, but no, that does not count. So you could argue that possibly she was retained by Michael Bloomberg, and Moms Demand Action was founded long before Sandy Hook happened, and Sandy Hook was just simply the event that they were waiting for.
Oh, it was like the whole thing with the Joker movie and all the media saying, there's going to be violence about this movie. Why isn't there violence about this? Will somebody please commit violence about this movie?
Yeah.
And then he had the Trace, which was supposed to be his, his anti-gun news mouthpiece. Except for every time a major news source cites the Trace, they point out, note that the Trace was founded by, by Every Town for Gun Safety's, founder Michael Bloomberg. Like every single thing that he has created is always forever linked to his name, and essentially is Bloomberg First, Bloomberg's group, Every Town, Bloomberg's group, March for Our Lives, Bloomberg's group, Moms Demand Action, Bloomberg's group, The Trace. And so what would he do? Buy something that is older than his activism. Buy the Brady campaign. He can do it. It's not that much money. I mean, they were well over their head in debt, but that's pocket change for him.
I mean, he's already bought a medical school, so why not?
Exactly. So I would say he would buy that just to get out from under his name.
Mm-hmm.
So needless to say, and then even if he did buy Brady, it's not like Brady's a powerhouse right now. It's not like it even eclipses Moms Demand Action, which itself has kind of gone into hibernation.
Rather go into hypothermia.
Bloomberg is running for president. Every Town and all of its subsidiaries, and that would include Moms Demand Action, March for Our Lives, would have to get a shut up order, like stand down, be quiet order, because if they do anything crazy or inflammatory and get any sort of negative press, that is Bloomberg's group getting the negative press, not, not Every Town, not that, because they're all his. So yeah, him running for president means that Every Town has to be quiet and get out of the way as not to draw focus to his presidency. So yeah, I am overjoyed at Michael Bloomberg, and I hope he doesn't chicken out. Cause again, all he is doing is he has put in applications for, I believe, Alabama and maybe Iowa. I forgot. He has put his name up for the primary ballots in two states, but I believe he may have missed some. Like, I don't think he's going to be on the New Hampshire ballot no matter what.
I believe you're correct on that.
Yeah, which is not a good start. So I don't know. I don't know what he's actually up to. It's certainly not official yet, but boy, there's a whole lot of talk of it. And whether they're left or they're right, there's not a whole lot of good talk about it.
And according to CNN, they did a poll and found out that 54% of likely Democratic primary voters in New Hampshire said, quote, they definitely would not vote for him in the primary.
But yeah. But, it doesn't matter who votes. It matters who counts the votes.
Yeah. But that's especially brutal because you've got the whole like blank ballot, the people will say, against Donald Trump, would you vote for Donald Trump in the general election or his Democrat challenger?
Right.
Not named, not gone, just unnamed Democrat. You insert whatever name you want here.
Yeah.
Yeah. People that's going to swing more. But, again, I was one that said, I am going to vote against Scott Brown. He was a terrible senator. I want him gone. You know what? I will vote for the Democrat because if he gets reelected, there's a chance he'll get entrenched. And I do not want that. Yeah. So better to have a Democrat I don't like than a Republican that's just pure poison. And so I said, all right, I'm going to vote for the Democrat come this Senate election. It's going to happen. And then Elizabeth Warren came forward and I went, okay, I guess I'll vote for Scott Brown.
Yeah.
Note, I was a registered Republican at the time. And after this election, I went to town hall and changed my registration to an independent. Cause I realized, no, I was identifying as a Republican, but that was not the case.
Yeah. We in our household, we decided that we would each register for one of the major parties for the preliminaries. Doesn't affect who we vote for in the generals, but not preliminary primaries. But so that way we could at least have some influence on the primaries.
Yeah, in Massachusetts, we have open. It's, honestly speaking, it is smarter to be an independent in Massachusetts anyway. Like, you are kind of dumb if you're in either one of the parties, because if you're an independent, it means that when you walk into a polling place during a primary, they will say, oh, you're an independent. Which ballot do you want? When I was a registered Republican,
yep.
Which, by the way, I was a registered Republican because, hey, it's Massachusetts. It's a Democrat state. What's the biggest middle finger? Republican.
Yep.
Sign me up for that one. But that meant that when I walked in on a primary, they would hand me the blue ballot.
Well, that way they knew which ones to throw out.
The red ballot. Exactly. I had people like badmouth me as they were like polling volunteers badmouth me as they were handing me the ballot.
How could you be one of those evil Republicans? You want to eat children, don't you?
Yep. And just because I've got a baby's arm hanging out of my mouth? How dare you? But as an independent, you go, which one do you want? So like for the primary, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be taking a Democrat ballot because that sounds like that's the one that's going to be more fun.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Tennessee still has closed primaries, right?
No.
No?
No.
No, that doesn't matter.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there is a way to publicly declare that you're, officially declare that you're one or the other, unless if you're actually running for office.
Interesting.
Interesting.
So there you go. Tennessee is officially bi-curious.
While I think that's funny, I don't think I'll repeat that too much around here.
Which, hilariously led to, I knew some hardcore Democrats around here that at least were pushing for people who were Democrats to jump sides and vote for Trump in the primaries, because then whoever...
It'd be an easy one to beat.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, that was also happening with Rush Limbaugh was calling for Republicans to vote for... I can't remember which one he was, but he was making calls when the primaries were coming around who to vote for, just so that they would remain deadlocked and have to go to like a brokered convention. Because I mean, that would just be just horrible. Like, any party that has to go to a brokered convention is no good, because you just lose all party unity going into the general election. It just makes a mess.
Yeah, and it was one of those things that, for most of my life, I've been very happy that Tennessee doesn't care whether, what your declarations are. But that time around, seeing people at least talking about doing that, just
the dishonesty.
That's just dirty pool. Come on, guys. If you truly believe in your candidate or whatever, then believe in your candidate and do it the proper way.
Dirty pool, old man.
I think we've gone for long enough on these subjects. Either way, run, Michael, run. ACB is endorsing you. Don't throw me in that fire patch, Michael Bloomberg.
Do it.
Aaron, because I was listening to last week's show today, you had mentioned something about maybe having an event, a fundraiser of some sort for
a raffle. Yeah. I'm late on that. I was gonna do it last week, and I kind of set myself a deadline, and packing and things like that. So, real soon now, promise. But was there something specific you wanted to ask?
Oh, I was going to ask for details, and have you pimped the whole fundraising thing? And
no, not
be supportive and stuff.
Not yet. That's going to be one of the things I do this week. You know what? I'm just going to commit and say I'm going to do it tomorrow. Fine, I'll
awesome.
Do it.
Okay. So tomorrow, either being tomorrow as of the recording of the show, or tomorrow when you guys hear this.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna try for Tuesday.
Okay. So everybody listening to this, keep an eye on the Operation Blazing Sword Facebook group and webpage for exciting new announcement.
Mm-hmm.
That work for you?
Yeah, that's great.
All right, awesome. So that was, of course, the dulcet tones of the lovely Erin Paulette.
yes, I'm fabulous. Glitter
and dulcet. And of course, the reminding of Oddball who wants to give money so he can get some drum magazines, I'm sure.
Well, and I heard something about some knives and
yes,
other stuff.
Okay, you will probably be the only person who this means anything. I don't know. I've not heard of them. But there are going to be two custom knives made. Now, I don't mean knives as in made to your specification, but custom as in these are one-offs that will never be done again. One is a knife by Matt Harris, which is valued at $75.
Okay.
The other is a knife by Morgan Atwood, valued at $125.
Okay. Cool.
Okay, see, these names mean something to you. They don't mean anything to me. Do they mean something to you?
I want to say that I've heard the names. I cannot place exactly where, which probably makes me a bad knife expert.
But I don't have any sort of webpage for Matt Harris, but Morgan Atwood's page is here. It's BFE Labs.
I like the title, Equipment for Austere and Hostile Environments.
Mm-hmm.
It's like something out of a traveler adventure.
Ooh, yes.
What are knives made of?
Unobtainium.
I don't know.
Shade. Those are pretty.
It looks like it's the 3D printed or carbon fiber, maybe.
The push dagger is made with G10.
Yeah, I was going to say, I see a few that are clearly G10.
Very cool. But yes, so that was Oddball. Of course, there's also David.
Run, Michael, run!
Yes. and I am weird.
New York loves you!
And I have always would like to thank our wonderful supporters on Patreon. You guys keep the show running, and hopefully you are enjoying the additional shows that we surprise, such as the film tracks and the mag dump, and of course the blooper reels.
Everyone loves the blooper reels.
Yes. And of course, remember, rate us on Apple Podcasts so that we need to get some numbers there. And share it with people. Come on, we want more people listening to this show. Because come on, this is good stuff. Mm-hmm. And we could do the plugs or whatever. You know my blog and all that stuff. So
WeirdWorld.com. That's WeirdWorld.com.
And Aaron, am I putting you on the spot for an outro?
You are now.
We all have different political opinions, but we all think Michael Bloomberg should run. Yay, our political something or other is assorted and so is our podcast.
Brilliant! Thank you. Good night, everybody.